The Black Talk Radio Network is made possible in part with help from the Black Talk Media Project, a North Carolina-based nonprofit engaged in the production and distribution of independent digital black media. Find out more by going to blacktalkradionetwork.com or blacktalkmediaproject.org and look for the menu tab, Crowdfunding Black Media. Black Talk Media Project, helping to provide you with new black media for the new millennium. Opinions expressed by callers, guests, and hosts do not necessarily reflect those of the Black Talk Radio Network and Black Talk Media Project. Black Talk Radio is new black media for the new millennium. Good afternoon. You are tuned in to Black Talk Radio News. My name is Scotty Reed. I'm broadcasting from behind the enemy lines of USA Inc. Today's day is July 5th, 2016. It is a pretty much big news day concerning the FBI having a press conference with the FBI director Comey having his press conference to say all that he said, only to then say that he's not recommending criminal charges to the Justice Department. And this has really blown up online as well as in the news media. I mean, people are just shaking their heads that this man could come out and get his press conference laying out the clear violations of law, but then start adding on to the law and talking about there was no intent. Now, we can argue if there was intent all day long, but the Espionage Act and the Federal Records Act do not require intent. In terms of the Espionage Act and handling classified material, it just calls for gross negligence, which he said she was grossly negligent, extremely careless. So for him to say all of those things and then even to say that other people, if they did the same thing, would be charged, we don't think that charges are appropriate for Hillary Clinton. So him just confirming for millions of people, not just in this country, but around the planet, that the USA Inc., the United States government, is hopelessly corrupt. It's just hopelessly corrupt. I don't know any other word to describe it. Now, should this come as a surprise? No, it should not come as a surprise to people who have been paying attention to the unjust acts of the United States government and protecting criminals and what have you, so while attacking people all over the planet. So this should not come as a surprise to you, but I think what is surprising so many people is that there are just clear violations of law. And if you heard FBI Director Comey's press conference, which I'm going to play here in just a bit in its entirety in case you did not hear it, but if you watched it live like I did, you was thinking this man is laying out all these facts, he's citing all of these laws and seeing this and that and the other. Hillary Clinton is toast. He can't do anything other than recommend criminal charges because he just laid out the case for prosecution. But that's not what he did, is it? He basically told everybody that certain people in this country are above the law. And I'm just reminded over and over again by what H. Rap Brown said, and it's just so true, that their laws keep us down as a people. All right? They don't adhere to the law in no shape, form, or fashion. They can clearly violate laws, international treaties, and all manner of things, and they just keep marching on. Nobody's ever held accountable. And it's just a culture of unaccountability. Now, we've been talking about this in terms of police terrorism and killings, extrajudicial killings in this country. No accountability. And this is just showing everybody who was out there on the street and demonstrating against the system, protesting the system, saying it's corrupt, that, hey, he just gave you just more evidence, undeniable evidence that the system is corrupt. And I mean, damn, they just made Donald Trump look like Nostradamus, really? Because he predicted this. He was like, it's corrupt. I predict no charges for Hillary. The fix is in. The system's rigged. And now he's being made to look like Nostradamus by FBI Director Comey today. So that's the main topic. I don't know, man. I'm just flabbergasted. Again, I'm not surprised. I'm just shocked that they would put the system in that they would just be so openly blatant with how they administer justice, not only in this country, throughout the world. And indeed, certain people are above the law, but shouldn't be any surprise. Especially with the Obama administration coming in saying that, you know, they weren't going to prosecute anybody involved in torturing people through the CIA torture program. They weren't going to prosecute any Bush administration officials for the crimes that they committed. And we're looking forward. We're not going to look backwards. So I imagine that's the speech he's giving right now in Charlotte, North Carolina. They said the director has concluded his investigation. He said he's going to recommend no charges for Hillary Clinton, so we must put this behind us and look forward. HRC 2016. I'm just speechless right now, man. I mean, again, not that I'm surprised, it's that they're not even pretending anymore. It's just blatant right there in your face. It's like they challenging the American people to do something about it. It's really what they doing. They challenging you to do something about this corrupt system, about the corrupt actors in this system, the crimes that they have committed. This is just crazy. And you don't want to press charges and all of that, even if she never sees the inside of a jail, which I think is highly doubtful that she will. But even then, just the gross negligence that he talks about in this press conference and how she lied to, he didn't say she lied, but she lied to the American public for an entire year saying she didn't send classified information. It wasn't marked classified at the time. And that, it turns out, straight up lie. We all knew it was a lie anyway. There's just so much, so much. But before I get into that press conference from the FBI director, who everybody said was a honorable man, he's going to do the right thing. Look, if he finds wrongdoing, he's going to go by the book. Well, they got two different books. They got a book for you, and they got a book for them. And it's not the same. You don't get the same treatment. But before I get into that, you know, I want to talk about another story first before we jump into that. Because over the past couple of days, y'all know it, for those who don't follow sports, it's the NBA, that's the National Basketball Association, a free agency period. and the salary cap is as high as it's ever been, and it's even said to go up even higher next year. Salary cap means how much one team can spend in salary for its players. And so that salary cap is pretty high in basketball. And they was like, people was getting handed multi-million dollar contracts like candy. I'm serious. Like, they were handing out million-dollar contracts to players who I don't even think is all that good. Like Jeremy Lin, the Chinese descendant guy who was playing for the Charlotte Hornets, now going to the New York Knicks. Man, they gave that guy. This guy's a scrub, man. He's a straight up scrub, and he's a bench player. But he got a 4-year, I think it's a 4-year deal, almost $40 million, $10 million a year for being a scrub. So, but this is what I've been tripping on, is I've been listening to talk radio and all the different people talking about it. They were basically complaining. A lot of people were complaining about these players getting these kind of contracts, because you know predominantly these are black people. These are black men who are making all this money. And I kind of felt like that's the real reason that they were complaining, is they complaining that these black men is getting paid exorbitant amounts of money to play a basketball game, to play a game. Well, this is what I say to those people. They ain't making nowhere near the amount of money that the owners are making and that the NBA itself is making. So they got to be making billions of dollars to be able to hand out those multi-million contracts like that. It ain't your money. Why you worried about it? Well, it is your money, because you pay money to go see them play. Do they not entertain you? You watch them on television and whatnot. You get them to endorse your products and what have you. And so why you want to hate on them? Because they making all this money. It's not their fault. They don't set the market. The market is set, you know, in terms of what the market dictates for a specific player. So, I'm just tripping on all these mostly white men complaining about these contracts that these NBA players are getting. And then I started thinking about it on an even deeper level. I was thinking about, you know, that's more and more people that hopefully if they manage their money right, that, you know, their future generations are set for life. If they manage their money right, okay, they are set for life. If they don't go out and blow it all and don't invest it wisely, they will set up their families for decades to come, generations to come. Who knows? Who knows? And that's really what they angry about. That's what I think most of this anger over these contracts that these sports players get, you know. And then people want to talk about, you know, well, they shouldn't get paid that much money. Well, you ain't the one damn paying them. So, you know, just hold your horses. When you start paying those salaries, then you can complain about it. But I'm just, again, reminded of all the good that many of these players do for the communities that they come out of, the impoverished, neglected, maligned communities that many of these men, quote unquote, escape from. You know, hate to say it like that, but you know, that's how they describe it. They escape from poverty, or they escape from the hood, or something like that. And many of these players, man, are not recognized for how much they give back. And so I just want to share a story with you about this NFL player for the National Football League. I think he plays for the Giants, if I'm not mistaken, or he might play for Denver. No, he plays for Baltimore, the Baltimore Ravens. His name is Elvis Dumervil. Now, those people, remember the Haitian earthquake that happened a few years ago? Well, those people are still trying to recover. Regardless of the billions of dollars that the Clinton Foundation and the Red Cross took in, with all of these pledges of billions of dollars to help the people of Haiti. They ain't being helped. They are not being helped. And you may have seen this story about the Red Cross, which is actually, I did not notice until I read this story, it's actually an arm of the United States government. They're like a non-governmental organization that really is a governmental organization, the way their charter is set up. And I know they took in almost $1 billion, if not more. You know how many homes that they built in Haiti? They built 6 homes in Haiti. All that money, all those pledges from different countries, all the individuals who gave all this money to the Red Cross for Haiti, not to mention the Clinton Foundation, and only 6 homes have been built. Only 6 homes have been built in Haiti. Now, let me share this story with you about what Elvis Dumervile, this NFL player who makes multi-million dollars a year. He's one of the better linebackers in the NFL. Let's read this story. It's not very long. I'm not going to read the full story, but this is what he was able to do in Haiti with not nearly even a quarter of the amount that the Red Cross and the Clinton Foundation took in. All right, Elvis Dumervile took his first trip to Haiti not only to see where his mother and ancestors come from, but also to see firsthand how his rebuilding effort is helping a nation that is struggling 6 years removed from a catastrophic earthquake. The Baltimore Ravens linebacker is building 58 houses for those in need in Haiti, which corresponds with his jersey number, in an effort to raise support for a country where 85,000 people are still homeless due to the earthquake and 200,000 more are staying in slum tents. This project will cost Dumervile $377,000 or $6,500 per house. Last weekend, Dumervile accompanied New Story Charity to see the first families move from the slums into their newly built homes in Bercy, Haiti is the little town. All right, I posted that for you on our Facebook page on Black Talk Radio News, because I don't think these guys get enough credit for the very, very important ways that they give back to their communities and help people in general, just not their communities, but help people in general. Nobody's putting a gun to their heads. Nobody's forcing him to build these homes. Nobody's forcing him to come out his own pocket. Nobody's forcing him to do that. He's doing it because he care, obviously. And then, you know, and oftentimes this is not front page news. You know, you'll certainly hear about, like, if they do something negative, like, for example, Talib Akwi for the Denver Broncos getting shot in a club. They don't know if he got shot by somebody else or he shot himself. You know, they will give a whole lot of hype to that in the U.S. media. But the hype that they don't give you is the hype on the work that these men and the women who love them, their wives and what have you, girlfriends, who also play a big role in these programs that help these children. So I just wanted to point that out because I found it quite telling, I think is the word I'm looking for, that this man already has built more homes in Haiti with far less money than what the Red Cross took in for the earthquake relief in Haiti, and has done far more with less. This is a travesty, man. This is a travesty. But nothing will happen to the Red Cross. There will be no audit. There will be no congressional hearings to figure out what they did with all this money. Mostly they're saying that it went towards administrative costs, but looks like we got a phone call coming in on our Skype studio line. Area code 267, you're on Black Talk Radio News. What's on your mind?
Hey, Scotty, this is Brother Ralph calling from Philadelphia. How you doing today?
Hey, I'm doing okay, man. I'm doing okay. I'm just shaking my head at President Obama here in North Carolina with Crooked Hillary, as Donald Trump calls her. I'm just shaking my head at that dude, man.
Man, I'm calling in because I was listening to your dialogue about the Red Cross.
Yes, sir.
Also, and let me tell you when I stopped donating to organizations like that. It was probably the late 80s or early 90s. You know, they accidentally, because I know they didn't want people to know this about the United Way here. It was the person that took over for Bill Gray. And they put their salary down. And it was like $400,000 a year. So I said, well, wait a minute. If we're giving money to this organization, they're going to get theirs right off the... Yeah, they're going to get theirs right off the top. Because, you know, and then they're going to pay... You know, so then you talked about the Red Cross. So I said, let me Google the Red Cross's CEO. It's a lady called Marsha J. Evans. She gets $651,000 a year, Scotty. And you
that's
know
crazy, man.
Fact,
say that again. How much?
$651,000 a year. That's her salary.
Now,
so
see,
you know she has a. Now you know she has a staff,
right?
That gets paid also. So I'm not even going to look at that. I'm just looking at hers, and I'm looking at United Way. And United, like I said, the head of United Way was getting like $400,000 a year. In the late 80s, and as a young man, I knew something was wrong with that picture. Wait a minute, you have enough to donate to these organizations so they can help poor people. What's going on here? You know?
Right.
So
right.
It just seemed like both organizations were nothing more than a pyramid scheme.
I mean, that's more than the
CEO. Go ahead.
Brother Ralph, that's more than what President Obama makes in a year.
Marsha J. Evans, $651,000 a year.
Wow.
So, and like you said, they work directly for the United States government. I mean, it's a government entity.
Yes, it is.
United Way, Red Cross. So you wonder why the poor people of Haiti weren't taken care of. It was paid to those staff people. Man, I tell you, Scotty, the more we stick around on this planet, the more we learn, man. And you can Google up Marsha J. Evans. Google her. You know what I mean? I you know, like maybe somebody made a mistake about her salary, but
no,
I know.
They didn't. They didn't. And then on the donations that came in specifically for Haiti, articles were saying that, man, 80% of that went towards so called quote unquote administrative costs.
There you go. If you have administrators drawing that kind of income, like almost almost there, like $600,000 salary a year, something's wrong with that picture, man.
Yes,
so
it is.
That's why the people in Haiti didn't see anything. That's why I think it was Wyclef John, he wanted to like do something and they heard him shut him down. And you know, and that's why they keep on telling you, you know, filling us with the dirt these athletes are doing instead of the positive things they're doing. Even though I got some issues with LeBron James, he is donating money for young boys' education.
Yes.
Unlike another brother, you know, I'm not going to say his name, but he was trying to get donations out of the black community, saying that he wanted to open a school for black boys, but then when push come to shove, people found out that he actually could have gotten the money. They just wanted to keep a track of it, and he turned it down. So, you know, there's a whole bunch of scams out here. A lot of stuff sounds good, but then when you really look between, and I'm not going to mention this guy's name, man.
I got an idea who you're talking about.
Yeah,
but,
a lot of people in this so-called conscious community, they love him. You know what I mean? Because he hollers and he screams a bunch of stuff that makes them feel good. But if you're going to, if you're, you know, come on, man. So anyway, Scotty, I just had to call in because a lot of these athletes don't get credit. When I was down there in New Orleans, and I was in that ninth ward, and I saw the damage, I did see houses being built. But they told me Chris Paul and Drew Brees went in their own pockets and were building up homes so poor
yes,
people
they
can
were.
Move back in.
Yes, they were.
You got Ward Dunn, who has a housing foundation for single mothers in Atlanta. Mm-hmm. See, these things aren't talked about
at all.
But they're just focusing on people like the Dallas Cowboy wide receiver, you know, who's young. You know, who's young and has a lot to learn. I forget his name.
You talking about Dez Bryant?
Yeah, him. They're focusing on him and his little crew at the mall, but they don't never focus in on what these brothers be doing. Or Donovan McNabb, they're plaster his picture all over the internet for a DUI arrest, but never let you know he did a lot for the youth in Chicago as far as recreation centers. See, there's a lot of things these brothers be doing, man, and we don't hear about it.
Right.
So, I appreciate the dialogue you're bringing up today. And I had to, let you know about these crooked organizations. United Way, Red Cross. Oh, man, please. And I'm going to add another one to it. This daggone affordable health care is nothing more than a scam. Ever since it came into play, Scotty, let me tell you, I was paying like $700 a month, just for the best health care so I wouldn't have any deductible.
Okay.
But then I would get bills from different doctors for x-rays, for this, for that, for lab. I said, well, wait a minute, what am I paying $700 a month for?
Right.
That Obamacare is nothing more than a scam for these insurance companies, man. And, once again, we got taken hook, line, and sinker.
Mm-hmm.
There's no poor people benefiting from that. If anything, they're robbing us blind, man. And people are going bankrupt because of that Obamacare or affordable health. So we got taken again, man. These people lied to us.
Yep.
They lied to us, and I just appreciate the dialogue, because we need to become unbrainwashed and really, let the people know the truth behind all this garbage that they're being infiltrated with on a daily basis, man. So I just had to call in and get my 2 cents back.
All right. Thank you, Ralph, man. Call in anytime.
Yes, sir. Talk to you later.
All right. That was Brother Ralph, a contributor. A financial contributor to the Black Talk Media Project. Certainly appreciate him and everybody else. The reason I was coming on late is I had t-shirts to send out. I had them on the front porch. It started raining. I forgot it was raining. Totally ruined the package. Wet the shirts up. So I had to repackage those before the postal lady came for the pickup. That's why I was late coming on air, because I didn't want to miss that pickup, because the postage expires after today. So anyway, appreciate you, Ralph. Appreciate everyone who has given. Just about finished. I finished the social media reports. I'm almost done with the radio station reports. Halfway done with that, and still working on that podcast issue. So we will get those reports out to all our contributors who are participating in the crowdfunding campaign for Black Media. Again, I was listening to some people earlier today, and they were just talking about things going on in the Black community, and they were saying some things, and I just knew that their perspective was coming from mainstream media, because the people, and I'm not going to say any names or anything, I'm not on here to call anybody out, I'm just on here to present problems as I understand them and hopefully come up with a solution. And we need a solution to all this disinformation that is fed not just to Black people but to people all over the planet, man. You got six corporations, media corporations, controlling 95% of all media operations, not just here in the United States, on the planet, basically. On the planet. That's why you see African women over there with blonde weaves and blue contacts and all that. They've been watching MTV, you know, or BET or whatnot. So, you know, it is very important that we engage in this work, because as I was listening to them, they were talking about a particular organization that I happen. It's not really an organization. It's a movement. And I happen to know people who work in that movement. We've had people on this station, on different programs, interviewing them, talking about the problems and the solutions. They even came up with a website with very, I felt like, very constructive policy proposals, you know, to the U.S. government to address police terrorism. But these people didn't know about it. They didn't know about it. They were under the assumption that these people aren't offering any solutions. All they're doing is out there in the streets holding up signs and rioting and stuff like that. Well, again, I don't fault. I'm teaching myself to not hold animosity towards people who have a different viewpoint than I have, because I have to consider we are not getting our information from the same places, you know. And I can readily identify when I hear stuff that's coming straight from mainstream media, because people will repeat those talking points verbatim. They might change it up a little bit and whatnot, but basically they repeat the same things that they hear from mainstream media. And that's a problem. Can you gain valuable information or intelligence from mainstream media? Yes. They don't lie about everything, and sometimes they only share half the information with you. But it's on you to do the research and reach out to different groups or different individuals if you want to know what they're about or what their solutions to problems are. You got to talk to these people. We can't talk at each other. We have to talk to each other. And I'm talking about people who are interested in solving problems, who truly care about the black community, which these people do. I you know, have observed them for a couple of weeks now, well, over a month now, and interacted with them. And I know they care. They honestly do sincerely care about the black community. But they seem to have a viewpoint that is based heavily in mainstream media. And so I don't hold any animosity or anything like that towards them, but I just try to do my best in an appropriate manner at appropriate time, point them to the correct information and what have you. So that is what we are engaged in through the Black Talk Media Project. That's why we were founded, because Malcolm X said the media is the most powerful entity on the face of the planet. It can make the innocent look guilty and the guilty look innocent. And that's power. And we just got a demonstration of that power today through the FBI's press conference, trying to make the guilty look innocent. And we'll get into that in just a bit. But I didn't plan on doing this, but I want to share a letter that I got from a listener who found our station by accident. And I want to read that to you before we go on with the rest of the program. This letter came to me from a Mr. Kamathi. I'm not going to say his first name. He lives in California. And I got a letter yesterday, and this is what that letter said. It said, "Dear Mr. Scotty Reed, enclosed, please find my initial support donation of $25 to the Black Talk Media Project. T-shirt size extra, extra large. What about coffee mugs for initial donation? I started listening to your station by accident. I was listening to Coast Radio, and I got tired of the mainstream alternative information, so I did a search for black radio stations online. Since listening to Black Talk Radio, I have learned so much about relevant, current, and past black topics. I was thrilled to hear a Marcus Garvey speech on one of the station's programs last week. Please advise if there is any advertisement outreach to reach black parents, teens, students, organizations, etc. regarding the Black Talk Media Project. You have been laboring to keep this vital project afloat for the past 7 to 8 years, yet I only became a listener by accident. Please remind your listening audience during your station breaks that they are benefiting from the programming content to please support financially with a monthly support commitment of $10 or $20 or more. I appreciate what you and the staff are doing and will support by making a monthly contribution, and also do my part in spreading the word about the Black Talk Media Project. Good health and wealth, Mr. Kamathi. And so thank you if you're listening, Mr. Kamathi. You don't know what these letters mean to me. You know, when somebody takes the time out to write a letter, and this isn't the first letter I've gotten over the years of this nature. And when I'm feeling like I'm beating my head up against the wall and we're not going anywhere, or we're not reaching enough people, and just, you know, trying to come up with media strategies on, you know, how can we reach more people? How can we do this? You know, it just warms my heart then when I get a letter like this saying, you know, somebody found it by accident, or somebody told me about the station, and since I tuned in to the station, it's been a great benefit. And that lets me know that we are on the right track, that we are doing the best that we can do with the limited resources that we have to provide a truly independent Black radio platform, podcasting platform, as well as a news outlet. And so again, thank you, Mr. Kamathi. Thank you to everyone who has made regular contributions, and of course those who even made one-time contributions and what have you. You know, I do believe I'm not so pessimistic as some of other people who are engaged in the same activities that I'm engaged in. There's been articles coming out about Jet Magazine and Ebony Magazine about to be sold. And, you know, just the death of Black independent-owned media and what have you. But those people, they take a pessimistic attitude that, oh, it's nothing we can do now. You know, it's just over for us, you know. And I just don't believe that. I do not believe that. I believe that we can just regroup, re-strategize, and then implement a solution to the lack of independent Black media. And I think I found one. And I think I have laid out a blueprint for others. And I've made, you know, it the mission of the Black Talk Media Project to help Black people launch their own independent media stations and platforms. And it doesn't cost as much as you might think, you know, especially if you're just starting out. Obviously, as the years go on, as your listening audience, as the people who visit your website grows, obviously your costs are going to go up. But the entry level for you to get started is not that high. It's not that much. It's not that much. And so I just feel like if enough of us in enough places make a commitment to be the media that we know is lacking in our communities, then we will take one step closer to solving the problem. It may take 10, 20 years, may take 30 years. My daughter, who's showing an interest in this, may, you know, in 20 years take over for me and what have you. But I just feel like there's nothing else more important than us establishing an independent Black mass media network. Not just one platform, but platforms that are specific to each and every community or space where we are residing. So I just wanted to share that. Now, when I come back on the other side of the break, I want to get into this press conference that was held by the FBI director, Mr. Comey, who has come out and said he doesn't recommend any criminal charges. That it's not up to him, but it's highly unlikely that criminal charges will be brought, especially after you had Attorney General Loretta Lynch, who I was given the benefit of the doubt. Now, I tried to, you know, but it remains to be seen if she's a person who practiced justice or if she is one of those non-white proxy tools of racism. All right. But again, this just shows, man, how utterly corrupt, how utterly unfixable this system is, man. This corporation, in my opinion, needs to be dissolved immediately. There's no hope for justice coming from this government. And so therefore, since there is no hope for justice, then we have to act accordingly, and we have to replace this system of injustice. So on the other side of this quick station identification break, we will go right into Director Comey's press conference. You're listening to Black Talk Radio News, broadcasting this program Mondays, Tuesdays, Thursdays, and Friday at 4 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time. We'll be right back.
The Black Talk Radio Network is made possible in part with help from the Black Talk Media Project, a North Carolina-based nonprofit engaged in the production and distribution of independent digital black media. Find out more by going to blacktalkradionetwork.com or blacktalkmediaproject.org and look for the menu tab, Crowdfunding Black Media. Black Talk Media Project, helping to provide you with new black media for the new millennium.
You are tuned in to Black Talk Radio, new black media for the new millennium. And welcome back to Black Talk Radio News. This is the FBI director. I forget his first name. Is it Robert Comey? But he gave an unexpected press conference this morning. So let's go into that. If I can get it to play. Let me see if I refresh this page. I might be able to get this video to play. It's posted on C-SPAN, and I embedded it in the promo page for today. So give me a moment as I try to reload that, and so we can hear that audio. All right, it's reloading now. But I'm saying, if you listen to this, just listen to it. You think this man is about to announce this woman or that he's about to recommend criminal charges. And, you know, for him to come out his mouth the way he did and say we're going to make this record, it just makes absolutely no sense. And many legal observers going off of the things he laid out and said, this is makes absolutely no sense whatsoever. Here, so let's try this again.
FBI Director James Comey on Hillary Clinton.
Good morning. I'm here to give you an update on the FBI's investigation of Secretary Clinton's use of a personal email system during her time as Secretary of State. After a tremendous amount of work over the last year, the FBI is completing its investigation and referring the matter to the Department of Justice for a prosecutive decision. What I want to do today is three things. I want to tell you what we did, I want to tell you what we found, and I want to tell you what we're recommending to the Department of Justice. This is going to be an unusual statement in at least a couple of ways. First, I'm going to include more detail about our process than I ordinarily would, because I think the American people deserve those details in a case of intense public interest. And second, I have not coordinated this statement or reviewed it in any way with the Department of Justice or any other part of the government. They do not know what I'm about to say. But I want to start by thanking the FBI employees who did remarkable work in this case. Once you have a better sense of how much we have done, you will understand why I am so grateful and so proud of their work. So first, what we have done. This investigation began as a referral from the Intelligence Community Inspector General in connection with Secretary Clinton's use of a personal email server during her time as Secretary of State. The referral focused on whether classified information was transmitted on that personal system. Our investigation looked at whether there is evidence that classified information was improperly stored or transmitted on that personal system in violation of a federal statute that makes it a felony to mishandle classified information, either intentionally or in a grossly negligent way, or a second statute making it a misdemeanor to knowingly remove classified information from appropriate systems or storage facilities. And consistent with our counterintelligence responsibilities, we have also investigated to determine if there is evidence of computer intrusion by nation states or by hostile actors of any kind. Now, I have so far used the singular term email server in describing the referral that began our investigation. It turns out to have been more complicated than that. Secretary Clinton used several different servers and administrators of those servers during her 4 years at the State Department. And she also used numerous mobile devices to send and to read email on that personal domain. As new servers and equipment were employed, older servers were taken out of service, stored, and decommissioned in various ways. Piecing all of that back together to gain as full an understanding as possible of the ways in which personal email was used for government work has been a painstaking undertaking, requiring thousands of hours of effort. For example, when one of Secretary Clinton's servers was decommissioned in 2013, the email software was removed. That didn't remove the email content, but it was like removing the frame from a huge unfinished jigsaw puzzle and then dumping all the pieces on the floor. The effect was that millions of email fragments ended up in the server's unused or slack space. We searched through all of it to understand what was there and what parts of the puzzle we could put back together again. FBI investigators also read all of the approximately 30,000 emails that Secretary Clinton provided to the State Department in 2014. Where an email was assessed as possibly containing classified information, the FBI referred that email to any government agency that might be an owner of that information, so that agency could make a determination as to whether the email contained classified information at the time it was sent or received, or whether there was reason to classify it now, even if the content had not been classified when it was first sent or received. And that's the process sometimes referred to as up-classifying. From the group of 30,000 emails returned to the State Department in 2014, 110 emails in 52 email chains have been determined by the owning agency to contain classified information at the time they were sent or received. 8 of those chains contained information that was top secret at the time they were sent. 36 of those chains contained secret information at the time, and 8 contained confidential information at the time. That's the lowest level of classification. Separate from those, about 2,000 additional emails were upclassified to make them confidential. Those emails had not been classified at the time that they were sent or received. The FBI also discovered several thousand work-related emails that were not among the group of 30,000 emails returned by Secretary Clinton to state in 2014. We found those emails in a variety of ways. Some had been deleted over the years, and we found traces of them on servers or devices that had been connected to the private email domain. Others we found by reviewing the archived government accounts of people who'd been government employees at the same time as Secretary Clinton, including high-ranking officials at other agencies, folks with whom a Secretary of State might normally correspond. This helped us recover work-related emails that were not among the 30,000 that were produced to state. Still others we recovered from that painstaking review of the millions of email fragments dumped into the slack space of the server that was decommissioned in 2013. With respect to the thousands of emails we found that were not among those produced to the State Department, agencies have concluded that 3 of those were classified at the time they were sent or received, 1 at the secret level and 2 at the confidential level. There were no additional top secret emails found. And finally, none of those we found have since been upclassified. I should add here that we found no evidence that any of the additional work-related emails were intentionally deleted in an effort to conceal them in some way. Our assessment is that, like many email users, Secretary Clinton periodically deleted emails, or emails were purged from her system when devices were changed. Because she was not using a government account or even a commercial account like Gmail, there was no archiving at all of her emails. So it's not surprising that we discovered emails that were not on Secretary Clinton's system in 2014 when she produced those 30,000-some emails to state. It could also be that some of the additional work-related emails that we've recovered were among those deleted as personal by her lawyers when they reviewed and sorted her emails for production in late 2014. The lawyers doing the sorting for Secretary Clinton in 2014 did not individually read the content of all of her emails as we did for those available to us. Instead, they relied on header information, and they used search terms to try to find all work-related emails among the reportedly more than 60,000 that were remaining on her system at the end of 2014. It's highly likely that their search missed some work-related emails and that we later found them, for example, in the mailboxes of other officials or in the Slack space of a server. It's also likely that there are other work-related emails that they did not produce to state and that we did not find elsewhere and that are now gone, because they deleted all emails they did not produce to state, and the lawyers then cleaned their devices in such a way as to preclude complete forensic recovery. We have conducted interviews and done technical examination to attempt to understand exactly how that sorting was done by her attorneys. Although we don't have complete visibility because we're not able to fully reconstruct the electronic record of that sorting, we believe our investigation has been sufficient to give us reasonable confidence there was no intentional misconduct in connection with that sorting effort. And of course, in addition to our technical work, we interviewed many people, from those involved in setting up the personal email system and maintaining the various iterations of Secretary Clinton's server, to staff members with whom she corresponded on email, to those involved in the email production to state, and finally, Secretary Clinton herself. Last, we have done extensive work to try to understand what indications there might be of compromise by hostile actors in connection with that personal email system. So that's what we've done. Now let me tell you what we found. Although we did not find clear evidence that Secretary Clinton or her colleagues intended to violate laws governing the handling of classified information, there is evidence that they were extremely careless in their handling of very sensitive, highly classified information. For example, 7 email chains concern matters that were classified at the top secret special access program at the time they were sent and received. Those chains involve Secretary Clinton both sending emails about those matters and receiving emails about those same matters. There is evidence to support a conclusion that any reasonable person in Secretary Clinton's position or in the position of those with whom she was corresponding about those matters should have known that an unclassified system was no place for that conversation. In addition to this highly sensitive information, we also found information that was properly classified as secret by the U.S. intelligence community at the time it was discussed on email. That is, excluding any later up-classified emails. None of these emails should have been on any kind of unclassified system, but their presence is especially concerning because all of these emails were housed on unclassified personal servers, not even supported by full-time security staff, like those found at agencies and departments of the United States government, or even with a commercial email service like Gmail. I think it's also important to say something about the marking of classified information. Only a very small number of the emails here containing classified information bore markings that indicated the presence of classified information. But even if information is not marked classified in an email, participants who know or should know that the subject matter is classified are still obligated to protect it. And while not the focus of our investigation, we also developed evidence that the security culture of the State Department, in general and with respect to the use of unclassified systems in particular, was generally lacking in the kind of care for classified information that's found elsewhere in the U.S. government. With respect to potential computer intrusion by hostile actors, we did not find direct evidence that Secretary Clinton's personal email domain, in its various configurations since 2009, was hacked successfully. But given the nature of the system and of the actors potentially involved, we assess we would be unlikely to see such direct evidence. We do assess that hostile actors gained access to the private commercial email accounts of people with whom Secretary Clinton was in regular contact from her personal account. We also assess that Secretary Clinton's use of a personal email domain was both known by a large number of people and readily apparent. She also used her personal email extensively while outside the United States, including sending and receiving work-related emails in the territory of sophisticated adversaries. Given that combination of factors, we assess it is possible that hostile actors gained access to Secretary Clinton's personal email account. So that's what we found. Finally, with respect to our recommendation to the Department of Justice, in our system, the prosecutors make the decisions about whether charges are appropriate based on evidence that the FBI helps collect. Although we don't normally make public our recommendations to the prosecutors, we frequently make recommendations and engage in productive conversations with prosecutors about what resolution may be appropriate given the evidence. In this case, given the importance of the matter, I think unusual transparency is in order. Although there is evidence of potential violations of the statutes regarding the handling of classified information, our judgment is that no reasonable prosecutor would bring such a case. Prosecutors necessarily weigh a number of factors before deciding whether to bring charges. There are obvious considerations like the strength of the evidence, especially regarding intent. Responsible decisions also consider the context of a person's actions and how similar situations have been handled in the past. In looking back at our investigations into the mishandling or removal of classified information, we cannot find a case that would support bringing criminal charges on these facts. All the cases prosecuted involved some combination of clearly intentional and willful mishandling of classified information, or vast quantities of information exposed in such a way as to support an inference of intentional misconduct, or indications of disloyalty to the United States, or efforts to obstruct justice. We do not see those things here. To be clear, this is not to suggest that in similar circumstances, a person who engaged in this activity would face no consequences. To the contrary, those individuals are often subject to security or administrative sanctions, but that's not what we're deciding now. As a result, although the Department of Justice makes final decisions on matters like this, we are expressing to Justice our view that no charges are appropriate in this case. I know there will be intense public debate in the wake of this recommendation, as there was throughout the investigation. What I can assure the American people is that this investigation was done honestly, competently, and independently. No outside influence of any kind was brought to bear. I know there were many opinions expressed by people who were not part of the investigation, including people in government, but none of that mattered to us. Opinions are irrelevant, and they were all uninformed by insight into our investigation because we did our investigation the right way. Only facts matter.
And I'm going to stop it there because facts do matter. And the fact is, this man just laid out crimes that this woman committed in violating laws in regard, most specifically, the Espionage Act, which does not require an intent to hand over secret information to foreign governments or actors or whatnot. No, just gross negligence. So he is rightly being questioned by many in the legal profession. He is being questioned by people with common damn sense. All right. He just sat up there and said this woman violated this, had all this top secret information. She lied. He didn't call her a liar, but we know she lied all year. I did not send classified information that was marked or anything like that. And we just find out that that's just a bald-faced, blatant lie. Let me just read this key part right here. Although there is evidence of potential violations, look, dude, there's evidence of violations, not potential violations, of the statutes regarding the handling of classified information, our judgment is that no reasonable prosecutor would bring such a case. Prosecutors, blah, 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 blah. Why would he make such a prejudicial statement like that? That ain't his place to say. So I'm with Donald Trump on this one. The fix is in. They just made Donald Trump look like Nostradamus. I'm not surprised by this. Not surprised by it whatsoever. I just didn't think so many people would openly participate in not holding or allowing this woman to escape accountability for very, very serious crimes. Again, when I was in the United States military, I had a secret clearance. Okay. Then when we went to war in Iraq, I got a top secret. I got bumped up to a top secret security clearance. I went through all the training that this woman went through. All right. And like he stated, any reasonable person in those positions should have known that those were not a proper place to be storing classified information or to transmit classified information. If I had done what this woman had done, I'd have been court-martialed. I'd have been court-martialed. In the very least, I would have been busted down in my grade. I'd have been busted down to an E1 private. I'd have been given Article 15, a serious reprimand in my military folder. And it's just ridiculous that these people are not going to hold this woman accountable. Again, there's two justice systems. There's one for us and there's one for them. Even when this man lays out in detail the crimes that this woman committed, we're going to recommend that she not be prosecuted. There was another part of this, and he was talking about we couldn't find a case where somebody in a similar situation has been prosecuted. And you know the internet will get you. If you tell a lie, they will start digging up stuff. And they've already dug up several cases of people doing the same exact thing as Hillary Clinton. They weren't secretaries of state, but they mishandled and did not engage in the gross negligence. And I believe this was intentional. He wasn't talking about they did not intentionally delete emails. When you hit that delete button, that's intentional. That's not by accident. That's intentional. So this is just more evidence for more people who say this government ain't worth a damn. You can't trust nobody in it. They don't practice justice. All they know how to practice is injustice. I don't see how people want to hang on to this system or have any faith in it after hundreds of years of injustice. I just don't think it's possible. You just can't reform all these people, man, because you can put stuff on law into law. You can put all the laws on the book that you want to. But if the people who are in these positions, like the FBI director, James Comey, and they don't practice justice, well, the damn law don't mean nothing then, do it. This is crazy. There is one piece, and a lot of people are writing about this. The Intercept just came out with a piece. Let me see if I can find that piece right quick, because I think this was the perfect, well, not the perfect, but it was a good response to what this man said about FBI Comey's comments on Hillary Clinton. So let me see if I can find that right quick. Where did I put this? And also at the end, here's another important thing. He talked about administrative sanctions and security clearance. Every person, including Hillary Clinton, who he just laid out that was engaged in this, should lose their security clearances immediately. Their security clearance should already be revoked. It should have been revoked already, to be honest with you. This woman is not qualified to be not even, you know, a secretary in the sense of the word of a small business secretary. She can't answer phones for me. She can't take appointments for me. She can't do nothing for me. This woman is grossly, grossly, grossly incompetent. And if she's not grossly incompetent, she's grossly a criminal. This is what Andrew C. McCarthy wrote. FBI rewrites federal law to let Hillary off the hook. There is no way of getting around this, writes Andrew C. McCarthy. According to Director James Comey, a former colleague and longtime friend of mine, Hillary Clinton checked every box required for a felony violation of Section 793F of the Federal Penal Code, Title 18. With lawful access to highly classified information, she acted with gross negligence in removing and causing it to be removed from its proper place of custody, and she transmitted it and caused it to be transmitted to others not authorized to have it, in patent violation of her trust. Director Comey even conceded that former Secretary Clinton was extremely careless and strongly suggested that her recklessness very likely led to communications, her own and those she corresponded with, being intercepted by foreign intelligence services. Let me stop right there for a second. WikiLeaks just published thousands of Hillary Clinton emails today. Where do you think WikiLeaks got her emails? From hackers, of course. Where did the hackers get it from? From one of the several apparent servers that private, off-the-books, unapproved email servers Hillary Clinton was using that the entire world apparently knew about. Because she's so full of herself that she picked an email address that got her name in it. He goes on to write, yet Director Comey recommended against prosecution of law violations he clearly found on the ground that there was no intent to harm the United States. In essence, in order to give Ms. Clinton a pass, the FBI rewrote the statute, inserting an intent element that Congress did not require. The added intent element, moreover, makes no sense. The point of having a statute that criminalizes gross negligence is to underscore that government officials have a special obligation to safeguard national defense secrets. When they fail to carry out their obligation due to gross negligence, they are guilty of serious wrongdoing. The lack of intent or harm our country is irrelevant. People never intend the bad things that happen due to gross negligence. I would point out, moreover, that there are other statutes that criminalize unlawfully removing and transmitting highly classified information with intent to harm the United States. Being not guilty and indeed not even accused of offense B does not absolve a person of guilt on offense A, which she has committed. It is a I'm going to just stop it there. No, I'm going to jump down to the conclusion. He says, I think highly of Jim Comey's personally and professionally, but this makes no sense to me. Finally, I was especially unpersuaded by Director Comey's claim that no reasonable prosecutor would bring a case based on evidence uncovered by the FBI. To my mind, a reasonable prosecutor would ask, why did Congress criminalize the mishandling of classified information through gross negligence? The answer, obviously, is to prevent harm to national security. So then, the reasonable prosecutor asks, was the statute clearly violated? And if yes, it is likely that Ms. Clinton's conduct caused harm to national security. If those two questions are answered in the affirmative, I believe many, if not most, reasonable prosecutors would feel obliged to bring the case. And I don't even got to be no lawyer, people. You know, you don't have to go to law school. You don't have to be no law professor or anything like that. All you got to do is be able to read and comprehend what you read. And this woman has violated several statutes. And the whole thing of him talking about she didn't turn this over until 2014, and you know, he said that several times. Records were turned over in 2014. This is 2 years, almost 2 years after she left the State Department, when the Federal Records Act clearly states that you must turn over all work-related material. She turned over nothing for 2 years. Again, this is why I say to you what H-Rap Brown said so many years ago, their laws keep us down. They write these laws to target us. When one of them, and I'm talking about the racist political class, one of them violates these laws, well, you see, they don't recommend that these people be prosecuted. This is just extreme lawlessness, man. This is lawlessness. And this has always been the case with this country. I am not shocked whatsoever. I'm just outraged. I'm outraged that right now President Obama is in the Charlotte Convention Center telling people that Hillary Clinton is ready for the job. This is what he said. He's taking a dig at Donald Trump. And that's really all the Democrats got. She's not Donald Trump. She's not Donald Trump. She's not Donald Trump. Well, I tell you what, I'd rather have Donald Trump for 4 years and be entertained, because he won't be able to get much done whatsoever. But I'd rather he be in there 4 years than a known criminal, a person who is known to have assisted in war crimes globally, who have assisted in the overthrow of nations, who has partnered with terrorists to take out world leaders. I would rather see Donald Trump in there for 4 years. Here is what President Obama, part of his remarks today in Charlotte, North Carolina, at the convention center. Everybody can tweet. Nobody actually knows what it takes to do the job until you sit behind the desk, said the president, making a veiled reference to Trump. Sasha tweets, but she doesn't think that she is thereby should be sitting behind the desk. Well, you know what? Based off of your own State Department IG report, based off your own FBI director report, this woman, again, ain't qualified to be dog catcher. This woman ain't qualified to take customer service calls in a call center. This woman cannot be trusted because, for years, and we know because we got the emails, she was told that that email server was causing problems at the State Department, and they had to take down a level of their security in order for her to be able to send and receive. All right. She was told by two of her aides to get on government email. Her whole thing was, I don't want the personal to become public. Well, if you don't want the personal to become public, quit mixing personal business of the Clinton Foundation with the State Department business. It's not that hard to do. Really, this man gonna come here after two scathing reports. If we just touch upon just the gross negligence, how can you say that woman is ready for the big chair? Because she ain't. She couldn't even handle the State Department. Would not follow procedures, intentionally disobeyed the rules. But then we want to talk trash about poor people and their behavior and their conduct when we got high crimes and misdemeanors occurring at the highest level of government. And everybody just want to act like, oh, just move along, nothing to see here. Yeah, she put national secrets at risk. Yeah, bunch of hackers got into her email. But guess what? She's still the best for the job. Give me a break. Again, like I said yesterday, if I had done what she has done, if any of you, how many people of you listening to the sound of my voice right now think that you could get away with this on your job, that you could just blatantly ignore the SOP, the standard operating procedures, that you can just blatantly ignore protocols for handling whatever it is you handle and think that you're going to get a promotion out of it? What freaking kind of world do you live in? Apparently, we live in a crooked, corrupt world that does not operate on logic. This is just crazy, man. I'm just beside myself, man. Not because I'm surprised, but because it's so blatant and in our faces. And there'll be plenty of fools out there, like the plenty of fools right now in the Charlotte Convention Center shouting Hillary's name. This isn't even willful ignorance. This is intentional. This is an intentional negligence as voters. You don't even take voting serious. Now I'm starting to wonder, now I'm starting to see why some people say everybody shouldn't be allowed to vote. Not apparently that it's going to matter, because I'm predicting right now that if Hillary Clinton escapes indictment, if she secures the Democratic nomination and faces Donald Trump in the general election, I'm predicting massive electronic voting fraud, like has already occurred in the Democratic primaries, that the mainstream media is not reporting to you. I just, man, there should be a mass exodus of the Democratic Party right now if those Democrats had any kind of sense of integrity, if they had any kind of sense of principle, if they have a sense of right and wrong, a sense of morality. How can you condone this? You better not say nothing to your son about the way he dressing. You better not say nothing about him, about the way he's speaking and all this and that. You better not tell him, oh, you know, we got to obey the laws and this and that, when you turn around and you endorsing this criminal. You helping a dangerous white supremacist get into one of the most powerful positions on the planet, a white supremacist who have shown that black lives don't matter to her. And that she's in a pocket of a foreign nation that also practices racism and white supremacy, and that's Israel. Get prepared. If you're in the military right now, y'all might as well get prepared. Spend this year with your family, because next year your ass might be dead in Syria somewhere, or in Iraq, or God knows where else, maybe Iran. This woman gets in there, just go ahead and write your will. Go ahead and you know, say goodbye to your loved ones. Because she finna put y'all behinds in a meat grinder. You just watch. You just watch what I say. Y'all don't know Hillary Clinton like I know Hillary Clinton. And many other people know Hillary Clinton. This woman is a sociopath. She should be the subject of clinical studies, man, to figure out how she tick. She's dangerous, man. She's dangerous. So anyway, that's all I got for you today. Just some heads up. Tando Radio Show will not be on air today, as something came up last minute with Brother Dave, something important that he had to take care of. He wanted me to pass that along. Hopefully he'll be back on air tomorrow. But we do have a new program that's broadcasting or premiering tonight, and I'm pulling up the schedule right now, but the name of the program is Code Breakers, and they will be doing their debut program tonight on Black Talk Radio Network. I do believe that they come on at 10 o'clock, might be 9 o'clock, so just bear with me, all right, as I pull up this information about when they come on. Let me see, pull up the schedule for the station. And again, this is Code Breakers, And that show will come on at 9 o'clock p.m. I'm sorry. So it'll be on at 9 o'clock p.m. until 11 o'clock p.m. So it's a two-hour program. They're going to be bi-weekly, so every other week. They will be on Tuesday nights at 9 o'clock p.m. Eastern time. Remember, if you're interested in joining this radio station, if you think you want to be a talk radio host, if you got important things to share, don't hesitate to contact me about being on our station, as we certainly have some blocks of time open and available that are there on a first-come, first-served basis after we screen your program. While we do not look for people to be in 100% agreement with the other radio stations, because we all got different viewpoints and opinions and different backgrounds, and that's okay. We ain't got to be in agreement on 100% everything, but I'm just letting you know, if you're into that cooning, if you're into that clowning, if you into that anti-blackness and that kind of stuff, I'm not interested. We're just simply not interested, and you can find somewhere else. But if you have a program that you think will be constructive and will be of interest to our listening audience, don't hesitate to contact me. You can hit me up by email at admin, as in administrator, that's admin at blacktalkradionetwork.com. Let's see, tomorrow I will not be broadcasting tomorrow Black Talk Radio News, but I will be on New Abolitionist Radio. All right. Recognize the fact that we live in a corrupt, unjust world, that there are two sets of rules, rules for the rich and politically connected, rules for the proxy racists and what have you, and then there's rules for everybody else. If you're listening to my voice, you probably fall in the category of everybody else. I don't have any quick solutions for you today, but I just know this, that we cannot continue to stand for this blatant corruption, this blatant slavery that they're practicing, this blatant terrorism that they are spreading all across the world. How much longer are we going to stand for it? When are we going to reach critical mass to where enough people stand up and we can get rid of this crooked, corrupt corporation and institute a new republic? I don't have the answers. I don't have all the solutions. But I just don't see. I just don't see this changing anytime soon with passive acts of indignation or protesting and demonstrating. I just don't see it, man. We've been doing that for how many years? How many decades? These people just have a mind to do us wrong. So we just got to convince enough people to have a mind to do us right. Then hopefully we can formulate a plan and we can be rid of these evil, corrupt people that are causing so much pain in this world. With that said, peace and blessings to all. I'm out.